And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Macintosh Software Dating Game.
Welcome to the Macintosh Software Dating Game. Software CEOs, could I please ask you to introduce yourselves?
Hi, Fred Gibbons, President of Software Publishing Corporation.
Hi, I'm Mitch Kapor, President of Lotus. We do a product called 123.
My name is Bill Gates. I'm Chairman of Microsoft. And during 1984, Microsoft expects to get half of its revenues from Macintosh software.
The best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. I'm back. Hey, guys. And this week, I'm joined by two spectacularly handsome gentlemen. The first, you know him. He's been to space. He's back on Earth. It's Alex Excelsior Heath. Hey, Alex.
Hello.
Hey, that was pretty good.
I've been working on it.
That was pretty good. You must be wearing your BVDs today. And we're also joined by Adam Christensen, by one of my personal favorite podcasts, the MacCast podcast. Welcome, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
And since the recording is going, I want to say thanks again for joining us so last minute. I literally just pinged Adam like 10 seconds ago. And I was like, please join. Please.
A little longer ago than that, but that's fine. Yeah.
So thanks for hopping on.
I'm always happy to come on, so I appreciate the invite.
Well, sure thing. And we love having you. So thanks for being here. We got a lot of great stuff to cover today. We're, of course, going to talk about Apple's financial call that they just had. And normally, I think this stuff is totally snoozeworthy, but Alex has convinced me there is worthwhile stuff to talk about. And then you kind of dangled a fact right before we started recording that I couldn't believe that Apple is going to do. So we're going to talk about some of that stuff. We're also going to be talking about... Yeah, you dangled a major fact, man. You dangled it. It's right in front of me. So we're going to make sure we talk about that. wait a second. I just realized, you were joking before, weren't you?
I actually don't know what you're referring to.
I'm talking about the 7-to-1.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's true.
Okay. I was like,
it's totally true.
It just occurred to me that is outrageous that it's probably not even true. Well, but it is.
I mean, seven inches is it's a fine line.
Okay. Well, hold on. Before you reveal that to all, I do want to thank our sponsor, New Relic, for sponsoring this week's episode. You guys have heard me talk about New Relic a ton. They're fantastic. And if you're a web developer, I think that you definitely need to check out newrelic.com/cultcast. That's because New Relic is the all-in-one web application performance management tool that lets you see performance from the end user experience through servers right on down to the individual lines of your application code. New Relic helps people who build modern software understand the stories their data is trying to tell them. So if you're ready to make your software run better, head on over to newrelic.com/cultcast for an extended free 30-day trial. Thank you, New Relic, for sponsoring this episode. So we are going to talk about the financial stuff, as I mentioned. We've got some other great news items to cover, like the opening of the beta program for Mavericks, which I thought was really awesome. And Apple had a really great campaign going for Earth Day, which all of a sudden is like this huge thing, I feel like, in the United States. Never did I think Earth Day was so popular, but all of a sudden everyone's talking about Earth Day. So we're going to talk about some of that stuff, too. Let's start with the financial stuff, Alex. So the call literally just ended a few hours ago. Mm-hmm. And why don't you kind of walk through the highlights of the cool stuff that was talked about? Maybe you want to start with that fact that you dangled?
Well, before we get to the... Well, yeah, I guess why not?
Start wherever you want.
No, Apple stock is doing a 7-to-1 split, which is pretty huge. So that means that you owned one share of Apple stock, now you own seven. And so the value obviously is going down from like hovering around $525 to about $75 a share.
This is crazy.
Yeah,
I mean,
crazy.
Absolutely crazy. And I honestly didn't think this was ever going to happen.
Yeah, and Adam probably has a better perspective since he's an actual stockholder.
Yeah, I became a recent stockholder. And to be clear, I'm playing with my... I decided to take some of my retirement money from a job that I had left that I hadn't rolled over and was just kind of sitting doing nothing. And I bought stock a little while ago, and since I bought it, it has conveniently just dropped and gone down.
Waiting on that iWatch, man.
Exactly. You know, but I'm in it for the long term. But yeah, so I was kind of exciting because I was like, does this really mean I'm going to get, you know, for my, I think I have 30 some odd shares, that I'm going to get 6 more for every share that I have? And it's like, yep, that's true. But I mean, at the end of the day, I was talking with somebody I know who's a little more knowledgeable about this stuff, and he said, really, things like, you know, the stock price goes down, so it's effectively I'm going to have the same value of stock, at least initially, you know, when the split happens. Also, I was like, well, what about dividends? And he's like, well, no, you're actually going to get 1/7 of the dividends that you would have gotten before. So the dividends also work out the same way. So, because I think Apple was giving like around three and change, right, as a dividend.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to get split. That gets split too. So
okay, but hold on. I'm gonna make your whole day. I'm looking at finance, or Yahoo Finance. Yep. It's up 8%. It's up $41 in after hours trading.
Yeah. No, this is gonna. Yeah, I mean, this is going to be great. Like Carl Icahn and people like that who have been wanting Apple to do something really crazy with the stock. I feel like it just, the stock has been so like stagnant, and this will kind of help liquidate it a little bit.
Dang it!
Like, get it moving.
I'm so mad that I sold my Apple stock. I sold it like 2 years ago, and now I'm so pissed. I mean, because here's the thing about the split. I'm no financial expert, in case you needed me to say that out loud. But you know, the stock was always so expensive that normal humans, you know, generally couldn't afford it. Well, now the reason that splits are great oftentimes is because now it's affordable. Anyone can afford it. It's $75 a share. Well, many more people can afford it. So that usually, what usually happens after a split is the stock price goes way up because all of a sudden it feels very cheap. So Adam,
yeah,
what are you gonna do with your newfound wealth?
Again, it's all in my.
Is your podcast
stuff,
done? So are you
all,
gonna?
It's all fake money. I can't get it. I can't get at it. But it'll be good news because I mean I'll be able to turn that into, you know, more money for when I'm old and gray. So
gosh, dang it! I'm happy for you, unhappy for me. Maybe I'll have to get back into it. But you know, now it's too late. Now it's gonna be like it's probably gonna be like $100 a share in no time at all.
Well, yeah, and whenever like the next big thing comes out, like an iWatch or iTV or whatever, like you know the stock's going to go, you know, just soaring.
Yeah,
that's what I was waiting on, and now it's even better looking for me.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we got you on this show, Adam. This will probably be one of your last appearances. So
no, again. Awesome. Believe me, I'm so bad at saving for retirement, you know, and being self-employed. It's now even harder. So I hope what you're saying is right, but it's not going to benefit me till I'm retired. So
yeah, mm-hmm. I guess you got to wait a little while before you.
I'll
cash
be
in.
Going on lots of traveling in my senior years.
Yeah, there you go. Courtesy of the cook. Yeah, what else you got?
Besides the stock split, they reported $45.6 billion in revenue and $10 billion in profit, which is nothing to wag a finger at. And it's actually their strongest second quarter results ever in the company's history.
Wow.
And what I thought was interesting is that they actually sold more iPhones year over year, meaning like versus this time last year, and iPad sales actually declined. So while everyone has been saying that, you know, iPhone growth has stalled and, you know, the iPhone's dying, the iPad has actually been the one that's slowed. They sold 43 million iPhones this past quarter, and they sold 37 million this same time last year. And they sold 16 million iPads this past quarter and then 19 million the year before. So a 3 million dip in iPad sales.
They're doomed. Who wants to do the Windows podcast?
I mean, it is telling, like Alex is saying, like what, you know, that iPhones went up. And I'm more curious why tablets are stagnating like that.
Well, I feel like we underestimated the 5C was kind of like a sleeper in terms of like it was like a sleeper product, as in it's not the phone people go into the stores. We've talked about this on the show before. It's not the phone that people go into the stores to get. It's more of like they don't line up on launch day. It's more of like, oh, my phone's, you know, my Android phone, the contract is expired. I'll go look at a phone, and they end up picking the 5C. It's more of like a It's not for people like us, like who want the 5S. And right. So it's not going to just sell all at once. I feel like it's more of a gradual build. And the fact that they've got a lot of growth in China, and with the recent China Mobile deal, I feel like they're finally starting to see some payoff from that. And that's the only two things I can think of that would help these iPhone sales, because it's not like this wasn't the holiday quarter or anything. These are the last couple months, and there's been nothing new announced. So,
well, and I think you're right too. I mean, I think a lot of this growth was in emerging markets. The one bummer is that Apple doesn't break down like iPhone right. models or like, well, which or, is
yeah,
which.
5C to 5S sales. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be very interesting.
But I mean, if you listened in on the call, which I did a little bit, it kind of sounded like it was a lot in the 4S. And I think you're right. Also the 5C, a lot of the
yeah,
entry
the 4S
level
is
models.
Still selling. Yeah.
That is really surprising.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if that's in international markets.
You know, I'm just guessing based on kind of how they were talking about it. The other thing that they said during the call that was I thought was even more interesting was, I think Tim Cook said 2/3 of iPad buyers in this quarter of the iPads that were sold were to first-time iPad owners, and 1/2 of the phones to new iPhone owners. So that's a lot of new people in the Apple ecosystem,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and 60% of iPhone buyers were switching from Android as well.
Yeah, I wonder if this is all happening in China, because I kind of feel like the U.S. market is so saturated. I can't imagine that all of a sudden it would be there would be this huge swing for them for no reason, and there's no holiday season here, as you said earlier.
I think it has to be. I think it has to be part of it.
They had a huge growth in Japan, I thought they said, too. Like something about 50%
growth.
Yeah,
they're like 50% of the phone market in Japan, which is, you know, not what they have here. And Cook, even though the iPad sales were down, the iPad dominated. I listened to the whole call, and the iPad dominated most of the conversation. Like, Cook spent a long time explaining why they love the iPad, and he said it's the fastest growing product in Apple's history.
Mm-hmm.
And in 4 years, it sold 210 million units, which is insane. That's like to put that into perspective, that's 7 times the amount of units it took the iPod to sell in the same time frame.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that much bigger than iPod.
Yeah. And like 91% of tablet activations in the enterprise are iPad now.
I believe, because there's so many tablets out there. People always talk about the tablet market, but I don't know about you guys. I don't really ever see anyone with a quote unquote tablet. They either have an iPad or they don't have one at all.
Are you not qualifying iPad as tablet?
I do. I think that the iPad is a tablet, obviously. But I kind of wonder how big the tablet market actually is, because it seems to me that people want iPads. They don't want tablets.
Well, I see some like Samsung like Galaxy Tabs around every now and then. There's always like a couple in the airport or something. Like I know they're out.
There's always a few at the airport. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you can. I feel like it's a good indication of market share when you're like on the bus or in an airport or when it's just people traveling to see kind of what people have. I like to look around and look at people's devices. And I've started to see some Android tablets lately that I definitely didn't see a couple years ago.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I work in coffee shops a lot. Again, being kind of self-employed, I'm out of the house and I'm in Starbucks or, you know, different coffee shops. And I see the tablets from time to time that are non-iPads, but you know, I think it jives with sort of the numbers that Apple's giving. What I see in the wild versus what I see out in the marketplace seems to fall right in line with where we think the market shares are.
Hmm. Right. And Cook talked about Office for iPad as well. And it was funny because he acted like he was glad that it's in the App Store. He's like, you know, we welcome it. We're glad Microsoft decided to go ahead and, you know, and make it. But he was like, you know, I think, quote, like, if it had been done earlier, it would have been much better for Microsoft, frankly, is like what he said. So, like, it's kind of like, yeah, it's great, but they kind of already screwed the pooch.
You know, it was interesting that he would downplay that, though, because, you know, at the same time, he's given those 91% in the enterprise. That's only going to help solidify their enterprise.
Right.
You know,
and he alluded to that. He was like, you know, I know this is probably going to help grow us in the enterprise. We're just not sure how much yet.
I kind of see his point, though. It is kind of late. It's very late, actually.
It is late.
I mean,
it's
been forever that the iPad's been out now.
But those apps are still like the top three apps in the free charts for iPad.
I used Office or Word this week on my iPad, and I venture to say that it's a better experience than the desktop experience, at least for Mac owners, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, well, I believe that. Let's just leave it at that.
believe me, I am not. I hate Word, but I mean, if I had a document, occasionally I get these documents,
yeah,
again, that come in, and it's just like I have to use Office, so I ended up, you know, getting a copy, and then when the iPad versions came out, I had a document come in, and I had to work with it, and I was having some trouble with Office on my Mac, and I'm like, well, I'll try it on the iPad, and you know, it was great. It was actually really well put together. I mean,
they look like great apps.
I've heard nothing but good things about them. Actually,
it's very usable. It seems like it's designed for touch, just like, you know, the iWork applications are. So, you know, I'm not going to knock Microsoft when, you know, they didn't screw up. It seems to me the only downside on Office for the iPad, in my opinion, was that they kind of lock you into the SkyDrive, their cloud drive, or whatever they call their thing.
Yeah, OneDrive. Now it's OneDrive.
There you go. Yeah.
At least so for the short term, we'll see.
Getting stuff in and out was kind of tricky, but, you know.
Yeah, I kind of wish they would open that up and make it more available to Dropbox and, you know, the other more ubiquitous cloud sharing.
I don't think they're going to do that.
I mean, who uses OneDrive? You know, everyone uses Dropbox, so it would just make it more useful for people, I think.
Well, Apple needs the same memo.
Yeah. Hey, touche. Alex, anything else notable from today that we should discuss?
Not really.
Okay.
Gosh, at the very end of the call, our favorite analyst, Gene Munster, got on the line. Good old Gene.
The Munster.
Irfan has actually Genie? Been on TV with.
Oh, dude, yeah. I have been on TV with Gene Munster.
Tight buddies with him.
He comes to my barbecues. Great guy. Yeah. What did he have to say?
Let me guess. You know what he had to
Apple
say.
TV.
Yeah. Like, give me my bleeping gun, Apple TV. You know, he worded it really well. He wasn't as bold as he has been in the past, but he basically wanted to know why Cook recently changed. Like, Cook recently said that the Apple TV isn't a hobby anymore for Apple, which is, they've always called it a hobby since it came out.
Right, and they moved the link to the top of Apple's navigation on the website, right?
And he was like, hey, why? He's like, hey, what's the deal, man? What's the deal with this? And Cook was like, Gene, I don't know why I turned Cook into Bill Clinton there. That's weird.
That's kind of a mix, yeah.
It's not ITV, okay? No. he said basically that if it sells $1 billion, it's not a hobby, man.
Wow.
So yep.
he didn't get annoyed, though, because normally he gets kind of snippy with Gene.
Which, I mean, makes sense. Yeah, I don't think any company, even a company that's at Apple's level, should call something a hobby if it's making more than $1 billion. So,
can I just add that on the Cult-O-Mac post that you did, or on the live blog rather, covering this, appropriate use, apropos use of Huel lying on a big
thank you
pile of cash. For those Breaking Bad fans, you'll know who Huel is. And,
I just felt like that's how Apple feels every time an earnings call comes out.
Are you a Breaking Bad fan, Adam?
I have to admit I have not watched it
yet. Okay, well, then I'm going to stop there. I don't want to ruin anything for you.
It's fine.
So, okay, cool.
Don't worry about spoilers. I'm not going to worry about it.
Okay, well, for those people that may be farther behind, you know, I always hate it when people spoil stuff for me. And I remember one episode long ago, I think we gave away the end of of a Batman movie. And I still to this day hear about it, about how people have listened to that episode and it ruined it for them. So my lips are sealed. Let's move on. Let's talk about Phil Schiller. Well, actually, this is kind of a larger story, I think.
My gosh.
I know how excited you are, Alex, that I'm insisting that we talk about this. I'm a huge Loch Ness Monster. I don't want to say fan, because we don't really know if it exists, but, you know.
Well, we do now.
Does it exist? Does it not? Well, now we might know, thanks to Apple Maps. It finally has, somebody was using it for, I don't know, investigating Earth, and they found this picture. You guys probably have all seen this, of what looks like a giant underwater sea creature in the Loch Ness. And people are saying that this is the Loch Ness Monster. In fact, the official Loch Ness Monster fan club has a lot of mounting excitement because they're saying they've ruled out a lot of normal explanations, and they're thinking this might be the actual beast. I'm thinking it might just be some waves. Have you guys seen the picture? It kind of just looks like
at it right now.
It kind of just looks like the wake of a boat to me.
Of all of the ridiculous, like every once in a while, just an absolutely ridiculous story will come out related to Apple.
Yeah.
And out of all of them, this has got to be at least one of the top three.
Well, the reason it's related to Apple because it was found via Apple Maps, but also Phil Schiller tweeted out the picture.
Entirely sure that this wasn't Steve Jobs' yacht and it got captured going through the lock and they just photoshopped it out? There's like the wake is just left.
There could have been a boat.
It was his big ugly boat.
You think that boat's ugly? Oh man, I love that boat. Thing's beautiful. If you haven't seen the picture, Google it because it does look like an underwater sea creature. And they
or
said
you
it
can
was
go to it in Apple Maps.
Actually, yeah, you can go to it in Apple Maps. Although you might not be able to find it in Apple Maps, it'll take you unrelated body of water.
It's not too bad. look for the Inverness Loch Ness ferry landing, and then there you'll find it. It's just south of that.
So they're saying this thing was about 100 feet long, and you can see from the pictures, it looks like it has two giant flippers and a big tail. So I don't know. Could Apple Maps have discovered the Loch Ness Monster? Stranger things have happened.
Wake.
It could just be a wake from a boat. Any other theories before we move on, guys?
No.
It kind of looks like a giant catfish, really.
I thought the Loch Ness
Monster was supposed to look like more like a brontosaurus kind of thing with like a big long neck. And
that's what I thought too. Yeah. Remember that video from like
not like just a giant, a prehistoric catfish.
You're right. That's exactly what a catfish looks like. That's exactly, this is exactly what the monster looks like.
What if it is real and it just turns out it's like some sort of freakish dinosaur catfish held over from the prehistoric era?
That would be awesome. I mean, at least the mystery would be solved thanks to Apple Maps. All I'm saying is Phil Schiller thinks that the Loch Ness Monster is real. It's on his Twitter account. If you don't believe me, you can go check it out.
Sasquatch, too.
we have yet to discover Sasquatch, so stay close to your Apple Maps. Let's talk about the OS 10 beta seed program. Alex, do you want to hop in here and talk about it? I was going to have Buster, but Buster's not here, so...
Yeah,
I mean, I can fill us in too.
In the past, just like with the iOS developer program, you had to pay $99 a year to be a Mac developer and have access to pre-release software from Apple. So like betas of OS 10 and nothing major. And it's not like you're going to get, 10.11, like the entirely new OS, although you will, when WWDC after they seed it to developers, but this Apple is actually giving anyone the opportunity to beta test their desktop software, which is pretty big deal, I guess, in terms of it just doesn't seem very Apple-like. It's not that hard to do it anyway. Like even if you're not a developer, like if you really want the beta software, there's plenty of ways to get it without paying them $99 a year. But at least now it's kind of an official thing and you can just sign up on Apple's website. And you're not going to see, like I said, you're not going to be getting like the top secret versions of OS 10 that they're working on for the, years down the road, but you'll get like the next incremental, 0.1, 0.2 update. And it will have bugs. So be prepared. Like if you're going to beta test something, that's just what you got to. That's what comes with it is, potentially something won't work or an app won't work or something like that.
Or a critical app that you need, like Skype may stop working and then you can't do the podcast.
Skype will stop working regardless. So.
I feel like that's always the first one to stop working. Maybe I feel that way because Leander always installs the betas without giving it any thought. And then all of a sudden, all his devices are broken. So definitely keep that in mind. Adam, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I was just going
to
say, well, that's the potential downside of this, right? And it's interesting that they're doing this. Two things I thought immediately is, well, one, they did this originally when Mac OS X came out. Remember, it was like everybody got the beta who wanted it if you wanted to go from 9 to 10 and that first release, and then you got the, 10.0. But then the second thing was, it's like, you're going to have everybody and their uncle, who's an Apple fan installing this, and it's going to be probably a nightmare for Apple in terms of like handling you know, I don't know, PR or you're gonna have people that are gonna install this and be like, this is all broken and complaining on blogs and all that stuff. It's like, well, you're running beta software, dummy.
Or going to the Genius Bar.
Because there's like no barrier to entry. But even more so, I worry about it for like developers. Like, you've got all these people that are running their software, and then they're going to be running beta versions of OS X, and then their apps are going to break, and they're probably going to complain to the software developer, not the...
That's a really good point. And I kind of wonder why Apple decided to do this. I mean, initially, my first impression was, this is really cool, because it's going to make beta software much more accessible to everyone who wants to try it. But now I'm a little swayed hearing...
I don't know if you want that.
Yeah, you don't necessarily want to be using beta software.
You don't want a lot of, you don't want everybody to be able to run beta software. So hopefully consumers are smart about this, but I worry that they're not all going to be, especially in the Apple community. I mean, you have so many people who just really are clamoring to get the latest and greatest of anything from Apple because they're fans, and they're going to probably just jump in, not really thinking about a lot of the consequences. When you're in the developer program and you're a developer, I mean, I'm in that program and I think long and hard before I install a beta, and I never really, you know, do the very first one. I kind of wait around to find out, you know, when it gets a little more stable. I don't want to jump in that
totally
early.
Right. So lesson to be learned, or something to remember, if you are thinking about installing beta software, they do mean it's beta. They really mean it.
Right,
it really is beta, and there might be something that breaks.
Unless it's Google, because I think Gmail is still in beta.
Although I heard 2015 is going to be their year.
Somebody else did point out, though, haven't we really all been beta testing Mavericks for the past year anyway?
Yeah, well, I've been beta testing my Xbox One for like 4 months now, so, you know, it's just kind of the price you pay to...
Are we all beta testers at the end of the day, man?
Yeah, true, man. Yep. True, very true. Hey, guys, I want to continue on. I want to talk about iOS 7.1.1. We're also going to give you a really good tip on how to save money on Apple devices. This is something we've talked about before on previous shows, but for those of you that haven't heard the conversation, we're going to save you some money. And
like
we're also
Geico.
Geico. This has nothing to do with a Gecko or Geico, but thank you for dropping that. But before we do all that great stuff, I do want to thank our sponsor, New Relic. As I said at the beginning of the show, you guys have heard me talk about New Relic a ton. Really fantastic service for software developers to make their software run better. And also, they provide analytics for businesses if you want to make your business run more smoothly and understand the information that your business is giving you and help you actually understand what's going on. And our friends at New Relic have asked us to take a minute to say thank you to all you data nerds out there building all this great stuff that we all know and love. And they wanted us to give you guys a shout out. And this shout out goes to the developers, the software geeks, my personal favorite, the code jockeys. Hopefully some of the code jockeys wear jockeys. Adam, you're a code jockey, right? Code
yes,
wrangler?
Sir.
That's right. One of the brave few who see things differently. High fives to all of you, rule breakers and disruptors, Adam. Here's to working late nights, to wearing oversized concentration-enhancing headphones upon your furrowed brows. We thank you, Adam. The entire internet thanks you, Adam. What's really cool about New Relic is that they help everyone's software work better. And nowadays, if you're in any business, you're in the software business. Software powers our apps, runs our databases, manages our accounts, and runs e-commerce sites and email programs. When software breaks, everyone loses. Everyone gets sad. New Relic helps improve your software performance so your users have a better experience and your business is more successful. How is that for a win-win, Adam?
Good.
Yeah, you like that. Okay, good. if you guys want to give New Relic a shot and find out why tons of top-tier companies like Groupon run it, head on over to newrelic.com/cultcast, and you'll be up and running with a free 30-day trial in no time, and you'll get to see how New Relic can help you make your software run better. I want to thank New Relic for sponsoring the show. Okay, guys, let's talk a bit about the new iOS updates with improved Touch ID recognition. It was just made available recently, and the update comes with a number of bug fixes, and then reportedly improvements for Touch ID, fingerprint recognition. Alex, have you installed the update yet, or Adam, have you?
I have not. I have not installed it yet.
You freaking guys, me.
Either. I did. It's Touch ID actually does seem a little bit faster.
Oh, it does. Okay. Yeah. I have an iPhone 5, so I can't test it. But yeah. Do you feel like it's made your iPhone 5S more responsive, Alex?
No.
Really?
No.
Wow, that's a bummer. Yeah. And Adam, you have a 5S, but you haven't installed it.
Just a minor point update, right? Yeah, I never really had... I've not had that many issues. I know people have issues with the Touch ID. My Touch ID has functioned pretty well. Gosh. I mean, occasionally... as a miss, but
I just had to go into the Apple store and get a new one because they actually, the guy in there said that this is the first time at their store they've ever seen it. But after I updated to 7.1, my Touch ID sensor just stopped working, like altogether.
Entirely. Like, that was the repair right there.
Like, yeah, like you couldn't even like recognize it in settings, like when you're trying to add a fingerprint, like it just wouldn't work. And he was like, well, we don't have our hardware set up to replace Touch ID sensors yet, so I'm just going to give you a new phone.
Nice!
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, hey, at least they took care of you, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The one thing I did do is Steve Gibson kind of discovered, you know how you can go into like the Touch ID settings, and if you're on that screen with your, you know, with all your fingerprints that you've already scanned in, and you sort of touch the Touch ID sensor, it'll show, you know, kind of show you which finger that is? Mm-hmm. Registered. Did you guys know that little trick?
Uh-huh. I did not, but I was just encourage you to keep.
Yeah, so it'll kind of light up like gray. It'll fade in gray and fade out. What he discovered was is that when you're doing that, it actually is recording additional scans of that finger.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're having trouble with a particular finger, if you just go in there and just start touching that and activating that little that fade in fade out. And moving your finger around and kind of make sure you get the edges and the tips and stuff like that, it'll add additional scans for that finger and bring back some of their accuracy or make it more accurate for you. And so I did do that, and that seemed to help a little bit because I was having some situations where it was missing a few times here and there, and I did that on all the things that I had scanned, and then it became much better for me. So
you found that a little additional training really kind of helped solve your issues, because I've heard mixed reviews,
especially on the edges, really getting it to kind of register the sort of the outside parts of the finger that maybe the first time you set it up, you know, depending on how you were. Another bit of advice that I got from somebody, which I think is brilliant. So a lot of people, the first time they set it up, you put it down like on a table,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're just kind of touching the sensor. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not how you're going to use it in real life, right? You probably want to scan your fingers in just like you would if you were out and about. So if you're going to do your thumb, you know, hold it there and put your thumb on the sensor and actually hold it in your hand, right? Because the orientation is going to change.
Why would you set your phone down on the table to train Touch ID?
A lot of people do. Because,
really?
Yeah, you're sitting there at the table and you set it down and you're going through your fingers.
Okay, yeah. I mean, because I'm like, yeah, what you just said makes perfect sense. You'd want to use it as you normally use it so that your thumb or whatever finger you're using is hitting it in the same orientation that it normally will be hitting it, right?
Yeah. So
good. Anyway, solid tip.
Just a couple of Touch ID tips.
Okay, good. There you go. Train your Touch ID so it works better. Don't train it on a table. That makes no sense. I guess if you're just opening up your phone for the first time, that must
exactly,
be
exactly yeah. You're going through the setup process, okay. Right? You just got it out of the box. You're sitting there at your kitchen table.
I'm just envisioning someone taking their phone out of their pocket, setting it on the table, and then tapping it with their index finger like a monkey.
I'm talking about the first time you
set
it up.
Gotcha. Alrighty. Let's talk about how to save some cold hard cash on Apple devices. We have talked about this before. Some of you probably know that Apple has a refurbished store. And if you don't, you should know this because it's one of the best places to get refurbished Apple stuff. And I see people buying this stuff on eBay and Amazon, and it always kind of makes me think, why don't they just buy this from Apple? Maybe they don't know. Apple generally, I would say maybe 4 to 6 months after they release a new device, will start getting in or start making available newer devices that have had problems that they have fixed. And the great thing about Apple is when they have these devices come in, they generally replace the batteries entirely. They replace the casing entirely. So these things look brand new. And they put a 1-year warranty on them. So they're just like brand new devices in every way. So I always buy refurbished devices whenever I can because they're such a great deal. So Alex, we just got the new Retina iPad mini in the Apple store. Am I right?
Yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the prices and the models that are available and stuff?
It's just like it's 32 gig models and above, and it's I think it's about an $80 discount.
Woo! Woo-wee! That's a big discount for a brother like yourself. Yeah. So if you've been waiting for a discounted iPad Retina or Retina iPad, rather, now's a good time. And Adam, I think you were talking about this service on your podcast. Correct me if I'm wrong. Refurb.me.
Yeah, it was funny or interesting. I shouldn't say funny. It was interesting because I ran across them at Macworld. They had a booth, and the guy kind of pulled me in. You know, like people will do as you're walking by. It's like,
sure,
you do an interview, and I'm like, okay. And I'm always a little bit skeptical when someone pulls me in, and I'm like, okay, give me your spiel. What, you know, what's the deal? Huh? And he's like, well, this is our service. You know, Refurb.me. We help you monitor the Refurb store, and so you can like do a search, or if you're looking for a particular model with particular features, you can put it in there. You can save it, and you get notified. I'm like, this is awesome. How did I not know about this? He's like, you guys just get started? It's like, no, we've been doing this for like 5 years.
Wow. So, I had never heard of this either. And this is an awesome idea.
Yeah. And there's no cost. They make their money on like affiliate, you know, the referral. So I think when you go, you know, once it comes up and you click their link, you know, they get the referral cash from Apple, but it's no cost to you. So, you know, if they don't have the model, because that's the problem with the Refurb store is you have to kind of be right there when
it's hit or miss
up and it goes out really quick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially on the stuff that's really deeply discounted. So I thought this was awesome. So if you go to refurb.me, they have an app that you can download. And so what you do is you just kind of type in the model that you're looking for. It could be an iPad, it could be a MacBook, and then the specs. And I believe they tell you whether or not those items have gone on sale historically. So if they're available or not yet. And then it will notify you via iOS notification, via email or SMS whenever the item becomes available. And Adam, I don't know if you know this, but I heard that they actually work with Apple so that they are able to make those notifications happen really fast. Like as soon as something comes up on the store, they let you know.
Yeah,
can
I don't
you
know.
Confirm or deny that?
No? I don't know. He didn't mention that.
He didn't.
In the interview, no. But I mean, however it is, I think Apple has this information available on their website. I mean, if you want to write your own script, but why?
Yeah, you know? I suppose you could. But I also wonder if this stuff becomes available like all the way across their website, you know, because sometimes it takes a little while for this information to propagate. It may become available in New York before it becomes available in Seattle. So I don't know. Check it out. Refurb.me. I'm definitely going to be checking this out next time I need to buy a Refurb product because, you know, it is hit or miss. If you go to the website and they don't have what you need, then you kind of have to just keep going back. So really solid tip. Check that out. Let's talk about Earth Day, guys. I spent all day Earth Day in like my leather outfit. I was outside in the sunshine. I had my hair dreaded and just really enjoying the day. And I heard that Apple had all these great campaigns going as well to talk about.
You didn't have real leather though. You had like,
it was
fake leather.
Yeah. Pleather. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me. I was listening to like Jim Croce and stuff. It was great. And, Apple had all these great campaigns going for Earth Day. And let's just kind of run through them one by one, and maybe we could talk a little bit about them. So first and foremost, we got a brand new Apple ad that shines light on their new environmentalism. I don't know. I don't want to say. I shouldn't say new. Their environment. Yeah, their environmental initiatives that they have going on at their company, and they're really progressive. I mean, you guys know that they recycle everything, and their new Apple campus is supposed to be just incredible. We're going to talk about that in a sec, but they had a new Apple ad come on, and it was narrated by Tim Cook, my favoritest of CEOs. Did you guys get to see it?
Yeah, it was excellent.
Yeah. It was pretty good. I thought he did a bang up job in his best Steve Jobs style, you know, speaking passionately about what Apple does. I thought he did a really good job. So if you guys want to check that out, just search on. I'm sure it's on YouTube by now.
Yeah.
Do you know the name of the video, guys? Anyone?
Oh, it's on Apple's website.
Oh, there you go. What were you going to say, Adam?
I was going to say, I mean, the big thing here is that, you know, Apple has, in I think 4 years, achieved 94% renewable energy in all of their facilities, meaning like their campus facilities and more importantly, like their data centers.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a goal that they had set for themselves. Mm-hmm. I think 4 years ago, they were at 30-some percent, like 34% or something like that. So they've been working like super hard to kind of make that happen. And we saw that with like the Made in North Carolina facility was kind of the, like the big first time we kind of saw that, the news about that. And then this new, you know, this new facility that they're doing in Nevada outside mm-hmm. of Reno.
But and they had go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was telling you guys earlier before the show, though, I was bummed that Buster wasn't going to be here because Wired did a story on the center in Nevada.
Yeah.
And the Wired guy in the story, he goes like, I got a tour of the one data part of the data center that's open. It's not all open and fully functional. He's like, and I got full access, which was unusual. They, you know, let me go through there. But the one thing that they said is I couldn't tell you the name brand on the servers. So, you know, based on last time I was on, I think Buster was scoping out the Sapphire Ruby glass plant,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we need him to fly out to Reno with all his gear and like drop in there and tell us, you know, are they using Dell servers? I mean, is that what they, what don't they want us to know?
That is a
they're obviously Samsung servers.
Yeah,
very does Samsung obviously. Make servers?
I don't think so. No, they're probably Dell servers or HP servers. But it is funny that they would actually make that request that they wouldn't reveal like what servers that they use. I guess it's because it would be fairly embarrassing for Apple to be using, you know, Dell servers, wouldn't it?
But why? I mean, they made the choice to kill the Xserve.
They did indeed, but still, I mean, you don't imagine that Apple's cloud data centers are being powered by Dell, right?
No, it should just be banks and banks of Mac Pros and wine racks.
Exactly, in wine racks. Yeah, exactly. To your point about making their data centers renewable or to use renewable energy, it was cool because in the video they revealed some of the technologies that they use and they really pioneered some new technologies and pushed the envelope to you know, keep these data centers cool and running and from using solar arrays that they own to they are using the night air to cool the water that they use to cool these servers and then they use these giant radiators to keep the water cool. And then during the day, they circulate that water throughout the server systems to kind of keep them cool so they don't have to use AC. Because in a lot of these big data centers, they get really hot. And if you've ever been in a data center, they're really loud because they always have air conditioning going and fans going. So it seems like they kind of have put a lot of their ingenuity into making these things run more efficiently as well as, you know, harnessing solar energy to kind of power the whole thing out. Or Adam, were you gonna say something?
I was just gonna say, you know what was really weird about that, again, for the Nevada facility in this Wired piece, they made a point of mentioning that they put it in Reno, Nevada, because they wanted to use the desert air to like cool the facility. And I'm thinking, what? That makes no sense. Like, out in the desert, isn't it hot? But
not at night.
No, it's because the air is so like there's no humidity and it's such clean air. And if
they pull it in from outside and that the server rooms run at 80 degrees, which sounds warm to me, but I guess as far as servers go, maybe that's cool.
Most server rooms are probably hotter than that. They're super hot, yeah.
Huh. I used to overclock my PCs, you know, in college, and I'd have like all these fans and stuff on my PC and like the lights
and
everything.
What you did in college.
Oh yeah, dude, I was way into PCs and I would build my own on these huge ugly towers with like the glowing blue lights. Anyway, I'd be thrilled if my Intel Pentium 4 processor, I took it way back there, I wasn't using those, but if my Intel processor was in it running at 80 degrees, Adam, whew, that's like ice cold for a processor. That's doing pretty good.
Well, this is the room, not the processors, keep in mind. So I'm assuming that the actual servers are a lot hotter than 80 degrees if the environment they're in is at 80 degrees.
Yeah, you're probably right. Did you guys see the Apple Campus 2 video that Apple released? And they put this on their environmental climate change page that they put up, which I thought was really well done and just kind of shows Apple's overall environmental strategy and how they're, you know, using renewable energy and recycling all this stuff. And then they posted kind of like a really good glimpse into what they're going to be doing with the Apple Campus 2, that big, huge mothership they're building. And I thought this thing looked incredible. I know, Adam, you were actually on the show recently that we did where we asked the question, would you work for Apple? And we all said no. Yeah. I kind of regret saying that because now with this new headquarters, I might be willing to do it If they call
we
got
to get into the new Apple Theater thing at the very least. That thing looks cool too.
The Apple Theater.
Yeah, you know, so like where they bring in the press, they're going to have this whole new area on the campus where they bring in the press, and it's like this little, it's got its kind of own little separate entrance off to the side, and it's got this little part that sticks up above it, almost like an Apple store that's round and glass, and well, then it's all underground, right? You go like underneath.
It's a subterranean theater, yeah.
Wow,
and it's got like this really cool glass dome, kind of like the Fifth Avenue like glass structure that you go in, and that's like the waiting kind of area.
Lobby waiting area where everybody will be milling around. And,
yeah, so Apple will kill two birds with one stone. They won't have to go anywhere for product events anymore. They're in the future when they actually move into this place. They won't be at like Yorba Buena or anything like that anymore. Which is
I wonder
be
if they'll hold WWDC there too.
No, they don't have the space for that. No,
not that big.
I don't know, man. This place looked pretty huge, and they have a lot of meeting areas and stuff.
Well, that's their campus. This is like on a separate area of the campus. I think they also wanted to do it too because the current theater, does it have a back? I've never been for an Apple event. I don't know if either of you have.
Yeah, but no, I haven't.
The current theater is kind of back behind Cafe Max, I think, when they have those events on campus. But I think it has kind of a back entrance to it. So people don't, you know, they're not pulling reporters through the campus, obviously.
Yeah, probably not often. If you haven't had a chance to check out the Apple Campus 2 video, it's on Apple's website. Just go to their climate change page. I just thought it was incredible. And
you know what? Sorry.
No,
what was really interesting to see in that was like, and I knew they had done this, but you actually kind of get to see it, where they had built like mock-ups of like sections, like full-scale mock-ups of like sections of the building.
Yes. Yeah. And they were like walking through. I was like, how much money does this company have? They're building real-life mock-ups and walking through, and they had parts of it narrated by Steve Jobs. And I'm wondering if he got to walk through some of these.
No, you know what those are from? Those are from when he went to talk to the city council in Cupertino to get actually
right
approval.
Before he died, yeah.
Yeah, those quotes are all from when he made that speech to the city council saying this is why we want to stay in Cupertino and we want to build this thing. And
oh, yeah, they're spending a crap ton of money. They're sending their arborists like all around the world. And
first of all, back up. Apple has an arborist, okay? Yeah. They have somebody who walks around.
You know he's getting paid millions.
Oh, he probably is. And he's in this video.
And they're, you know, they're like flying all of these like rare trees over from like different countries. And like, yeah,
it's crazy. Not only that. Did you see the part of the video where he's like, we're combining native apple trees and we're grafting them into other native trees from Cupertino to create our own breed of trees that will be more natural to their environment. So Apple is literally rebuilding trees.
They're engineering trees
for their new campus. I want to work there. That's all I'm saying. If that's not obvious from my gleeful tone. Now I kind of want to work for Apple. This building looks incredible. This is the kind of forward-thinking, really cool place to work building that draws in top talent, I think, because people are just going to want to work there.
So they need to be dog cowboy trees, though, right?
Dog cowboy trees?
Dog cow wood trees.
Dog cow wood trees. Is that a reference I should get? Because
that's a reference to Claris, the dog cow.
Okay. Well, before you made a Monty Python reference, and I was embarrassed to admit I actually didn't get it.
But you know the dog cow, right?
No, I don't. No.
Oh boy.
What is this from? Now you have to enlighten us.
You know, when you go into, is it still in the print menu? Now I got to look. When you go into print and it shows the page orientation on a Mac, there was always this little dog that looked like it had cow horns, the dog cow. And his name is Claris, and it was one of the icons designed by Susan Kerr.
Oh.
It's one of the original Mac icons, but I don't even, I'm trying to remember if it's still in the print menu now.
You're making me want to go look, but...
Not during the show.
Yeah, I'll do that afterwards. One of the best parts of the Apple Environmental Initiative, I thought this was so great, was that ad that Apple ran in the UK Guardian and the Metro Today paper. Adam, did you see it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Laughing.
This was so...
They called out Samsung.
Perfect. So Apple ran this ad, and the headline was, in big letters, "There are some ideas we want every company to copy." And I thought this was genius. And they went on to say, there's one area where we actually encourage others to imitate us. When everyone makes the environment a priority, we all benefit. We'd be more than happy to see a data center fueled by 100% renewable energy sources. And we eagerly await the day when every product is made without harmful toxins. We have removed them from ours. Boom! Samsung, stuff it.
A little bit to Google, too, I guess, on the data center comment, probably.
There you go.
And Amazon, frankly.
it's like everybody. I just thought this was great. This is one of those Apple ads that we don't really get to see very often anymore, where they're kind of like snarkily attacking somebody else for... and it worked on so many levels, I thought. Really, really genius. And of course, really popular on the internet as well.
Kind of harken back to the welcome IBM newsprint ad.
Yeah,
a little bit.
That's exactly what I was thinking as well. And of course, that was a reference that a lot of other people made is when they saw this.
Oh, really?
yeah. Well, at least in forums obviously, and stuff yeah. that I had read. So, you know, Samsung. I just thought it was really kind of, it's not a low blow, but it's a funny blow, right? It's like, yeah, Samsung likes to copy stuff. Maybe they could copy this as well. Okay, let's see here. We're kind of running low on time, but I do want to mention this Nike story before we go, because Nike is exiting the wearable tech business, which I think a lot of people were surprised by, including myself. And Nike
yeah, it's a pretty
has,
big deal.
So Nike has always created or has been creating and has one of them had one of the most popular fitness devices that you can wear on your wrist. I'm spacing out on the name, Alex. What's the name of Nike's device?
The Fuel Band.
The Fuel Band. Yeah. Thank you.
It's the oldest one, too. It's like they kind of pioneered it.
Okay. And then it's been really popular, obviously. And Nike has said, we can't just do it anymore. We're going to go ahead and get rid of this, which a lot of people thought was strange because their Fuel Band seems to be doing well.
No. I mean, that's part of the story. They're not completely abandoning the Fuel Band. I think they still have like an update coming and they're doing more colors and like they've got their new API that they're releasing to developers that they can build more software for it and stuff. So it's more of like the report, the most telling thing in the report is that they were planning like a much slimmer, like next gen version of the Fuel Band that they've like ditched. So it's basically like all future R&D on the project has been kind of halted. And it's interesting with all this iWatch stuff on the horizon. And, you know, everyone's kind of thinking that we'll probably see it by the end of this year even. And for Nike to just kind of stop all of a sudden what it's doing, as you know, Nike is a very strong Apple partner, and like Tim Cook is on Nike's board of directors. Mm-hmm. He wears a Fuel Band in public all the time. He's talked about how much he likes the Fuel Band and how much he likes what Nike is doing in the wearable space and interviews and stuff. He's actually said that Nike's like one of the only companies doing it right. So it all points to, you know, kind of like what happened in 2006 when Nike and, you know, Nike CEO and Steve Jobs got up on stage and they announced, you know, Nike and the iPod. And, you know, these two companies share a history and they've worked really well together in the past. And there shouldn't be any reason why Nike doesn't help with, you know, because like with all the health book rumors and everything surrounding the iWatch, it seems obvious that health is going to be a huge part of it. And who is doing that better right now than Nike?
So are you saying, just so I understand what you're saying, that you think Nike is going to be paring down on their own offering, but also significantly contributing to Apple's offering?
Well, yeah.
Why they're paring back? Because that has been one of the rumors.
Yeah. It would make sense. You know, Apple saying, okay, hey, Nike, we want to bring you on board for this. We've got the hardware. We want your, you know, software. You know, they've got their, what's it called? Adam, you know what I'm talking? They've got like their points.
They have a few different apps. Yeah.
They've got their some kind of algorithm that it's supposed to be like one of the smartest ones that like tracks your fitness and tells you how you're doing and your progress. And so, you know, Nike, we want your expertise. And Apple has already hired, you know, some Nike execs, you know, in the past who worked on wearables and, you know, tech, like clothing that's got tech embedded in it. Leander's really all about this, that kind of thing. But, their fuel thing. And so it seems like Apple would say, hey, we want to bring you on board, but you gotta kill the fuel ban because you're just going to be all in with us. And, you know, that's, I don't know why, you know, the most valuable company in the world wants you to do that. I mean, why not?
Well, yeah. The one thing I'm wondering is, you know, is this going to be sort of, do you think this is an exclusive thing, or do you think it's also Nike looking at the whole space and going, you know, everybody's getting into this on the hardware thing, and they're like, probably. Let's take the Microsoft approach and just, we can partner and and do the software and sort of tracking piece for just tons of devices.
Probably. You
know, and really open it up and get the branding and integrate this real tightly with some of our other products that are more in our, I mean, before they did the fuel band, I guess they've done some tech products before, watches and things like that, but I don't know. It seems like they have a lot more opportunity in doing it this way than they do just, you know, continuing to mess with the hardware.
Well, yeah, because you know Apple's got its own hardware, and the hardware Apple comes out with is just going to blow away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is Apple's forte, right?
So, you know, if you can be a piece of history and be part of the iWatch, you know, and you already have a good relationship with the company, and like, I mean, gosh, its CEO is on your board of directors. Like, why not?
Let me ask you guys this. So part of the speculation for why Nike had pretty much, you know, withdrawn themselves from this market is because there's really just not a whole lot of demand there. We've seen the Samsung Galaxy Gear. It looks like it's doing terribly. I mean, you can get them on discount sites now, and they haven't even been out that long. All the reviews that I've seen for the Galaxy Gear, I've just kind of said, what's the purpose of this device? And Tim Cook said this at All Things D a little while back. He said that research has indicated that there's a lack of mass market among 10 to 20-year-olds for anything that is worn on the wrist. Uh-huh. And hearing that, and then seeing what Nike's doing, I'm like, is there a big demand for an iWatch-type device? Even when Apple releases their iWatch, you know, there's a demand for it. People seem to be interested in it, but it's not like it was when the iPhone came out. You know, it seems like some people care, some people don't. What do you guys think? Is this thing going to sell? Do you think people are going to be really excited about this?
Apple will make it sell.
Yeah.
I mean, we never thought the iPad would sell. So, I mean,
that's true. I didn't think it was going to be nearly as successful as it was.
I think the only thing Apple's come out with in the past decade that everyone knew was going to sell was the iPhone. Like the iPad got ridiculed so much.
the other thing you have to recognize is that, I mean, what Apple is really good at is analyzing sort of these markets and then looking at where the pain points are and creating a product that solves those pain points. The problem with all the products that have come out so far is, while they're really cool and whiz bang in terms of the technology, none of these other companies really think out the problem that they're solving. They're just like, well, people want really cool, you know, smartwatches, don't they? And yes, we all do, or we think we do, until we get one, and then we're like, oh, wait, this doesn't really do anything for me, right?
Yeah, that's a
great
Apple point.
Hasn't jumped into this market because they've spent a long time figuring out what this thing needs to be. And I think what they recognized is that, you know, people, especially in the whole health fitness market is always huge, and it's one of those markets that's also very fad driven, right? And so these sort of monitoring devices and integration with apps is getting really, really popular. So I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing so much focus in that area, and why they're looking at so much sensor technology that's going to go beyond just sort of what we're seeing now, which is basically like glorified pedometers. So I think there's going to be a lot more functionality. And I mean, honestly, right?
No, like you're absolutely right.
And
it's
cool and stuff like that. Uh-huh, but I mean, it doesn't, there's a lot of, you can get a lot of information in there, but you got to enter most of it other than like your steps, right? Mm-hmm. So we've seen Apple looking at different kinds of sensors for all kinds of things like heart rate monitoring. You know, we've heard about all kinds of other things. Who knows what this thing's going to have in it? But I can guarantee you what it's going to be. It's going to be sort of like this thing that you strap on your wrist, and it's just going to, everything's just going to work, and it's going to do a bunch of stuff and keep track of it. And the hardware software integration is going to be flawless. That's been another problem with a lot of these other devices. I don't know how the Samsung one is, but like the Pebble is really kind of kludgy when it comes to integrating. And then the other thing is, you know, and then it's going to have probably a bunch of other stuff we haven't thought about, because Apple has thought about all that stuff. So it's not just going to be in this other me too product. It's going to actually be, Apple is going to create that demand for it because they're going to create the market for it, because they're going to create the solutions for problems that people didn't know they had. But when Apple says, hey, this is the problem with this, everybody's going to nod their head and go, yeah, that's right. I want
I
one
do
of
need that.
But that's what happens, right? I mean, that's what they've been so good at for so long.
That is
I
what
mean,
they're even, good at, yeah.
Even like the iPhone, I never thought I wanted a smartphone, but, you know, I couldn't live without my iPhone now. So
I know. Could you imagine? Oh, it'd be terrible. I don't want to live in that world. Kill myself. The thing about that you said about the iWatch and all the like the products that have come out so far that I really agree with is they really have been limited in functionality. And what Apple is going to do, and I totally agree with you, is they're going to think this out and they're going to create something that does stuff that we didn't even know we wanted it to do. And that's going to be where the demand is going to be. Because you look at a lot of the stuff that's on the market now, including the Galaxy Gear, which I think is just a prime example. It just kind of seems like, oh, people want a smartwatch. We better get there before Apple does. Let's just get this out. And they released the Galaxy Gear and no one really wants it. And everyone that I've heard that has used it has kind of been like, well, this is kind of cool, but I don't really understand why I would want to buy this. It doesn't really do anything amazing that would make me want to spend $200+ on it. So I'm really excited to see what Apple actually pulls out of their hat.
Let's talk about the one thing that will kill it, though. Is it, who is it? Ming-Chi Kuo came out and said they were going to have a plus $1,000 version of the iWatch. That,
yeah.
But at the, you know, so I heard that, and then at the same time, I dug into the story a little bit more. And what he was saying was that Apple was going to have a bunch of different variations and options of this. And then that got me thinking about all of the different fashion industry people that they've been hiring. And that is another reason why people do wear watches, is because not because they want a watch, but because there's a whole segment of the market that it's a fashion accessory. I'm not in that segment.
I kind of wonder how many people who are into technology are into that segment. You know what I mean? They kind of seem exclusive to each other.
Well, here's the thing, though, is I know that iPhones are huge in the fashion world in terms of people using them. And so those people have iPhones. And so maybe it's just the sort of product that will bridge that thing. And again, I'm sure Apple has done all the analysis to figure out if this is viable or not. And then when they come out with a product, if they have a plus $1,000 one, I will tell you that they did the research and went, yes, we can sell a bunch of these to this market. If we don't have one, then obviously... what my instinct would be that's just silly, but you know, who knows?
Gosh, $1,000 watch.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be. I mean, for the regular public, but you could have the Swatch version and you could have the gold Rolex version. You know, in that type of product, it makes sense because you could have the guts be exactly the same. You're just changing the materials that wrap around it.
It's like CarPlay for the watch, essentially, where you could put it inside a Rolex, you could put it inside a Casio, have different price points. That would be interesting, actually, to see what they'll end up doing with that. So hopefully come fall, we will have more information on that. Let's wrap up with this, guys. Super duper excited. Leonardo DiCaprio might be playing the next Steve Jobs. Alex, how excited are you about that news?
It could be okay.
It could be okay. I mean, besides the fact that he looks nothing like Steve Jobs at all, I think that he could probably play the role pretty well. This news is coming from The Hollywood Reporter. Apparently, the next director of the Steve Jobs movie, who was going to be directed by David Fincher, it's going to be Danny Boyle.
Okay, no, this is like the same thing with Fincher. This is all very early talks.
Yeah,
like
nobody, very early talks. Nothing.
And Leonardo DiCaprio is like even earlier than Danny. Like it's basically like Danny Boyle's friends with Leo. And like he was like, hey, if I end up directing this, I would like you to star. It doesn't mean that. Because he's actually, Leo's shooting a movie this fall, which would probably conflict with their production schedule. So it's
Is it The Beach too?
Yeah. No.
See, I knew I could go to you with details of Leonardo DiCaprio's lifestyle.
But the likelihood of it happening is slim, but you know, you never know.
But it's there. Fingers crossed, guys. Fingers crossed.
These dudes look like it. I don't even know how that works.
I don't either.
I just don't see Leo as Steve Jobs.
Neither do I. He looks nothing like him. And I don't think the guy needs to be his twin. He doesn't need to be like Ashton Kutcher, but gosh, he needs to at least resemble him, right?
Right.
Right. My 2 cents. Okay, guys, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. We've taken it way past 30 minutes as we have often done. But, you know, as I always say, only about 30 minutes of the conversation is the best Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. So in that regard, we're still on time. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. If you want to hang out with us outside of the show, maybe on Twitter, you could do so. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Adam is MattCast, M-A-C-C-A-S-T. Alex is Alex E. Heath. And of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. Hey, Adam, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Really enjoyed having you. And if you guys want to check out the MattCast, he's on iTunes as well. Just search for MattCast on iTunes. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Next time. And Alex, is that you?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow,
just
bro.
Clear the pipes.
Yeah, get those things cleared. How many kids do you have?
Two.
Okay. Boy and a girl?
Two girls.
Do you have two girls?
Yeah.
Oh,
pretty awesome.
Man. Yeah, you like having two females, three females in the house?
Yeah.
It's great. You know, I probably would prefer girls as well. I just no desire to have boys at all. I don't want any competition in the house.
I told my wife before we got married, I would only have girls. If she she didn't like that, she shouldn't marry me. I kid you not. I told her that.
You put your foot down early. This must have been before you took a biology
class. And then she didn't believe me. And I said, I am a huge believer in the power of the mind, and I will make sure that only the right chromosomes go. And I was proven right.
Yeah, so, you were.
I win.
You willed yourself to two daughters. Either that or it was purely chance.
I'm going with Jedi mind powers.
That is some serious mind power that you have. Wow. Impressive.